Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Savage Nation. Now, you can turn off the rap. This is the Savage Nation. I want to read you some production notes that I sent to the staff yesterday afternoon. It's on michaelsavage.com. We have a new feature which is listing the production notes and the monologues. But here's what I sent them, a one paragraph, or bear with me. I wrote, guys, try to get for tomorrow Beethoven Symphony No. 9 conducted by John Elliott Gardner, especially cut No. 5, O Freunde nicht diese Tone. I want to play this all day and talk about how we've gone from Beethoven as the cultural zenith to gutter rapsters in one single degeneration, how young musical types used to try to achieve greatness by aspiring to playing Beethoven's Ninth, while today they might aspire to sing like a drug-dealing pimp. And how the same thing holds true for all other aspects of Western civilization. Young aspiring idealists once dreamed of being the next Louis Pasteur or Albert Einstein, but today we have thousands of mini Milkins with Bernie Madoff as the end of the line. That's what I sent them. Now, the reason I'm talking about this is because America is changing as we speak. If you want to talk about Obama and what he represents, we can do that. Today is all about race today. It's Martin Luther King Jr. Day, which is all about race. So let's talk about race for a moment. Let's talk about the curious and sensitive case of Obama's mixed race heritage. Notice I say sensitive, so bear with me and listen carefully. You see, the far left and the far right are going to play racial politics with Obama's presidency, and they are doing so before he's even been inaugurated. Racist liberals are complaining about Obama's mixed race heritage because they feel he isn't black enough. Now, of course, they will blame anything bad he does on his white genes and anything good he does on his black genes. On the other side of the aisle, racist conservatives are pointing out Obama's mixed race heritage as well. They will attribute anything good he does to his white genes and anything bad he does to his black genes. Now, what does that have to do with Beethoven? Everything and nothing. But my point is well taken. Take a look at yesterday's musical excerpts from the inaugural concert in Washington, D.C. None of them were on the level of Beethoven. There were no classical musicians. It was Bono again, one of the greatest frauds of our time. Bruce Springsteen, who's on both sides of the aisle at the same time. Stevie Wonder, who's a fine musician, but certainly not the kind of cultural representation that I would like to see at an inauguration, frankly. And as I said to you, in my day, people shot for the moon culturally. They shot for the moon. And I'll have to repeat it to you again. Anyone in music used to want to play in a symphony, and particularly Beethoven's Ninth. But look at the white boys today in particular. They get pants that hang down underneath their skinny white behinds with no belts, and they try to act like a drug-dealing pimp. You say, well, that's a symptom of our times. It sure is. But what about all the other aspects of Western civilization? Tens of thousands of the brightest used to want to be the next great savior of humanity through a medical discovery. Today they short-circuit it and they want to be on Wall Street and rob their grandmother of her life savings. Now, who are you going to blame for this? I don't know. You can blame anyone you want. It doesn't matter to me, but that's where we're at today. And that's really why we have Obama as the president. For over 30 to 40 years, it started with the far-left radical feminists who were screaming, and I remember at Stanford, hey, hey, ho, ho, Western civ has got to go. Hey, hey, ho, ho, Western civilization has got to go. The radical lesbians tried to topple the patriarchy, and they tried to overthrow Western civilization. And they've more or less achieved their ends. Now, the Republicans are as much to blame for Obama's ascension to the presidency as anyone else. And the reason I say to blame is because the man is the most far-left senator in American history. I mean, let's be clear. Maybe he's a very nice guy, but I'm sure Karl Marx was kind to his pets as well. It has nothing to do with whether he's nice or telegenic, or whether he has a nice wife and nice children. Obama's voting record is that of the most extreme leftist in the history of the U.S. Senate. We now have him as president. But he didn't come in on a wing and a prayer. He was put there by the Republicans, as much as by anything else. George Bush's disaster, his disastrous tenure of 8 years, I don't want to reiterate it, is as much a reason for Obama's ascendancy to the presidency as is the Republicans running the hack John McCain. Remember, Romney could have beaten Obama by at least 20 points. Romney is young, Romney is telegenic, Romney's a self-made businessman. He would have won. But strangely, he was pulled out of the race virtually overnight in the middle of the primaries, and they put the hack in John McCain. I have a theory on this. That is, the Republicans knew they were going to sack the Treasury in the last month or two, and they didn't want another Republican sitting there in the hot seat. So they figured, let the far-left Obama take it, or even Hillary, it wouldn't matter, so that the Republicans can come back in 4 years with Romney and say, let us fix the economy, and then they can rob us for another 8 years. This is the Savage Nation. Phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Now, this is not all related to Beethoven's Ninth, but I must tell you, yesterday was a long, long, long Sunday for me. I was alone most of the day, which I prefer. I put myself in the states of solitude, almost to the extent that I can't take it anymore. But it's usually at those, the perimeters of solitude, that I get some good thoughts. And I was digging around in my old CD stack in a house I hadn't been in a long time, and I stumbled upon John Elliott Gardiner's Symphony No. 9. Now, Gardiner, his version of Beethoven's Ninth, and I've heard many of them, to me was the most moving. I don't know if you know it, but John Elliott Gardiner actually conducted a symphony that used period instruments for the Ninth. Now, something happens to me when I listen to Beethoven. I begin to shudder. I can't think. My mind closes down. And I sit there in awe as though something, well, not as though, but something happens to me. Almost no other music does it to me. Beethoven does it to me. My body starts to quiver. I know it sounds crazy. It sounds like I'm being overly dramatic. I'm just giving you a relationship between me and a particular piece of music for a reason, and I'll get back to politics in a moment on the Savage Nation. What happens to me is I get very, very upset that on the same planet that I am walking, a man named Beethoven once walked, that as bright as I like to think I am, there was a man perhaps 10,000 times brighter than I am named Beethoven. In his mind, instead of having the clutter that I have, in his mind, instead of having the emotional baggage that I have, in his mind, instead of having the political pollution that I have, in his mind, instead of having the refuse of civilization that I have, as bright as I think I might be, there was a man who had this music in between his ears. And I shudder to think how rare that is. And then my body shuts down, my mind shuts down, and all I can do is shudder before greatness. This is the Savage Nation. Play a little bit of Beethoven again for the folks as we go out on this break. I'll take your calls at 1-800-449-8255. We'll also talk about the brainwashing of Martin Luther King Jr. Day. The brainwashing of Martin Luther King Jr. Day. are celebrating Western civilization, dead old white males, because on the Savage Nation, Western civilization is the greatest civilization that ever has been, and perhaps ever will be. And if you don't like it, well, you're listening to the wrong station. I suggest you listen to some Obamathon somewhere. I have no idea what they're celebrating in Washington. The man has done nothing yet, but it's as though the Messiah has arisen. I could see the happiness that a Democrat won, but what is this all about? I wonder, and I see neighbors still have Obama-Biden signs on their lawn, as though it's sort of like a secret passcode, like the old Communist Party. You had to have a party card. You know, you had to show you're a member of the party. Big deal, so you voted for someone. Take it down already. Who cares that you voted for Obama? Does that make you better? Good God, what's wrong with these people? Answer, liberalism is a mental disorder. Now, going back to Beethoven for the moment, he was deaf by the time he wrote the Ninth Symphony. Now, it's interesting to say, well, he was deaf. Yeah, well, maybe he became deaf to screen out the world, since the world was nothing but clutter and clatter and rubbish, and it offended him so greatly that he went deaf so he could listen to what was in his own head. And what was in his own head was one of the greatest pieces of music, if not the epitome, the tip of the pyramid of Western music, is Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, according to anyone who knows music. But what does it have to do with Martin Luther King Jr. Day and Obama? Maybe everything, maybe nothing. Maybe everything, maybe nothing. I'm not so willing to say that we should be celebrating so greatly because Obama's president. Remember, 47% of Americans said no to Obama. That's even though the Republicans ran an old party hack named McCain. So figure half the country is not happy with Obama, at least. And it's a $175 million price tag for the coronation? And this man is supposed to represent change? He's supposed to represent a man who is going to bring back dignity for the poor? Why didn't he just cancel the inauguration and say, I want the money spent on the poor? Why didn't he build one housing project somewhere? Why didn't he distribute some food for Africa? Why didn't he give out AIDS money instead of doing this? Answer, because he's no different than any other egomaniacal politician. So if you want to talk about this, you can. 1-800-449-8255. William Ayers turned back a Canadian border. It's on my website, michaelsavage.com. William Ayers, remember him? A so-called professor of education at the so-called University of Illinois in Chicago, was turned back at the Canadian border last night. He was going to speak at another communist university, invited there by Jeffrey Kugler, executive director of the so-called Center for Urban Schooling. He said, it's kind of ironic the day before Barack Obama is going to become president. This is what the Canadian border security has done, said Kugler. It seems ridiculous that one university can't have a professor from another university to come and give a lecture on an important educational topic. This is a matter of academic freedom. He couldn't be a threat to anyone. He's a distinguished scholar at the University of Illinois, said the Canadian commie shaker over there. To imagine anyway he was a threat to Canada is really absurd. Well, it could be because he tried to blow up the Pentagon, and we should maybe really have gotten angry at the Canadians for not letting him in. Could be because he never expressed regret for his terrorist activities. Of course, one day he might express regret, and then, of course, the Canadians will have been proven to be wrong. You know, I can't believe, where do violent old hippies go anyway? Well, they're all university professors. The professor who invited him doesn't know why he was turned back. That's because he tried to blow up the Pentagon, and he never said he was sorry. He's a respected educator? Are you kidding me? He's a respected educator? He's still a revolutionary, still intent on bringing down the U.S. He received part of an Annenberg Challenge grant, a $50 million match grant, which Ayers and Obama used to advance radical alternative education. And by the way, the funding did not go to improve Chicago schools, but it funded radical community organization projects such as ACORN, which helped get Obama elected. In case you don't know any of this. Black Liberation Theology of Obama's Trinity United Church of Christ, Reverend Wright, served with Ayers on the board of directors for the Woods Fund, which gave $75,000 to ACORN, $6,000 to Obama's church, and $60,000 to the Children and Family Justice Center, founded and run by Bernadine Dorn, wife of Ayers. Oh, by the way, the fund also gave $50,000 to the Ayers-Klonsky Small Schools Network. $75,000 grant was given to the Arab American Action Network, founded by anti-Semitic spokesman for the PLO and Yasser Arafat, Rashid Khalidi. Those are the friends that Obama had prior to his election. Any wonder William Ayers was turned back at the Canadian border? I'm surprised he wasn't sitting there on the dais listening to some music by Bono. But apparently he was on a way to give an important lecture on how to overthrow Western civilization, whatever's left of it. There it is, 1-800-449-825. William Ayers turned back at Canadian border. You heard it first on the Savage Nation. It's on michaelsavage.com. Little-known story that the little people in the media, the Lilliputians, won't report. I have other good ones today. Believe me, many others. Oh, by the way, look, this is the important thing for you to remember today. Here's the reason you're listening. Take this home. I, Michael Savage, do not give you the news. You can get that anywhere else. In other words, if you're listening to this show, you've already been on Drudge. You've been on the other sites, WND. You've been on my website. They're wonderful websites. I don't give you the news. You can get that in 2 minutes anywhere else on the web. What I do is I tell you how to think about the news. What I do is I tell you what to think about the major news stories. I deconstruct, I reconstruct, and I construct my vision of America through the news stories. That's what you're tuning in for. So make no mistake about it. I don't give you the news. You can get that on the web. I tell you how to think about the news and what to think about the major news stories. And that's what you tune in for. And no one does it like me, which is what makes the show worth listening to. And what makes me get up in the morning. Today is Martin Luther King Jr. Day. I'm playing Beethoven. Figure out why.
Savage.
Ihr betreten Feuer trunken, himmlisch schön ein Heiligtum. Meine Zauber binden wieder, was die Mode streng geht. Alle Menschen werden Brüder, wo dein sanfter Flügel weint.
It is the Savage Nation. Don't be disappointed or alarmed. We're celebrating Western civilization today on the Savage Nation. Our own little corner of civility, shall I say? Other music does carry me. Even John Coltrane's music carries me, but it doesn't lift me. That's what I'm trying to tell you. In other words, I can get carried by some other music, but I never get lifted by other music the way I do with Beethoven. And I'm playing it because so much of what we grew up upon, those of us who are a little older than the general audience in the United States of America today, we were raised to look up to certain cultural icons, and today we're forced to look down upon the cultural icons because we look from a different vantage point. We look from the mountaintops that we are to in our lives, and we cannot believe what all of the fuss is about over so many different aspects of our culture and society. Do you understand this or not? I mean, I do. I mean, what can I tell you? Kids of my generation wanted to be great physicists like Einstein. Great doctors like Jonas Salk or others, they wanted to save humanity. And I don't see that anymore. I'm sure they exist. I'm sure there are kids out there who are seeking the same level of peace. I'm sorry to use such a PC Christian word, but I'm sure they're trying to achieve something along those lines. Where are they? Have they all become left-wing children trying to save the earth from the evil white male? Is that what they become? Is that what their dumb hippie, drug-addicted parents have beaten them into, that little corner of stupidity? Save the earth from the evil white male. Save the earth from global warming, dummy. Is that what's happened to the great idealists of yesteryear? Is that what they're working on? I guess to a certain extent it's possible. Some of them in Marin County even produced terrorists, such as Rat Boy's parents. Of course, it is the father. It's true the father ran off with another man. That's enough to make anyone join Al-Qaeda. The mother, of course, left the Catholicism and became a Buddhist. And as you know, a Marin County Buddhist is about as valid as a cactus in the Arctic. 1-800-449-8255. Houston, Texas. David, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, sir. Good evening. I just wanted to commend you on the music that you're playing. I am
a Beethoven enthusiast like no other, and it's very refreshing to hear you comment on someone who is truly great throughout the years, for a few hundred years now, rather than dealing with the people who believe that good music today will inevitably be in the $1.99 slot at Kmart in the next 2 weeks. This man...
Well, let's say that I'm no expert on music. I want to make that very clear. I don't write music. I don't read music. I don't play music. So I'm no expert. All I know is that when I listen to Beethoven, particularly Symphony No. 9 at certain points, my body starts to shudder. I find myself closed down from thinking. I can't think, and my body is shaking. Why is that?
I'll tell you why. Because he exalts. There are people, it doesn't matter where you come from, they recognize greatness. There are people that stand in the midst of a symphony when they are playing the Ode to Joy like you've been playing. And they stand, they may not have any money, they may have ripped back pockets, but they stand up and they allow the music of the Ode to Joy to absorb their body. They stand with their head high and their chin high, almost as if they're allowing it to pass through them. This is not something you get with top 40. This is not something you get with country.
Are the schools still teaching classical music, the
no.
high schools? Do they still expose the children to this at all?
No, it's completely irrelevant.
So in other words, we've culturally degenerated to the point where they'll bring a rap musician into a school auditorium and hold up a drug dealer as a role model?
Of course they will.
Well, now you understand. Well, I know this. But, David, that's why I chose today and tomorrow to celebrate Western civilization. Because I'm not going to be dragged into that depth. I won't go there.
One thing, sir.
Let me ask you one last question. John Elliott Gardner, is he acknowledged as one of the great interpreters of Beethoven?
No. No.
No. Who would you say is the best?
In terms of composing?
No. In terms of conducting.
Who is actually the entire motivation behind the Ninth Symphony?
No. I don't think you heard me. Who is considered the best conductor, the best symphonic rendition of Beethoven's Ninth?
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, my goodness. If I had to pick one, sir, I would say Seiji Ozawa.
Now, the one I'm playing today is by John Elliott Gardner.
Yes, sir.
Do you like his work?
Yes and no. To be quite honest with you, I tend to be more of a Mozart fan. He doesn't tend to focus on Mozart himself. But to me, in my personal opinion, Seiji Ozawa is without question the skill of a surgeon when it comes to playing, especially the Ninth Symphony.
Isn't that something? Well, David, thanks for enjoying the show and enlightening us a little bit. 1-800-449-8255. Remember, this is the musical equivalent of the top of the pyramids in Egypt. The pyramid is considered one of the great architectural forms of all times. And the top of the pyramid, okay, has a name. Many of you know what that name is. And Beethoven's considered the top of the pyramid of music. And yet he's not taught in school today. And so they teach the music of drug-dealing pimps. Why is that? Why do boys walk around with pants that fall off their behinds and oversized pants and they don't have belts? They're imitating jail sissies. Now, how did that become acceptable? How does a father let his son dress like that without slapping him and burning his clothing and saying, you're not leaving the house in that getup? What would happen to the men? Where are they? What father would let his son walk out in pants falling off his skinny white behind without a belt? What father would let that? What, that's tolerance? That's not tolerance. That's cowardice. You take those clothes and you burn them in the fireplace and tell your son he's never leaving the house wearing that. He's not going to represent a jail sissy. But maybe it's the single mothers who just don't have the time to supervise the children. I don't really know the answer to it, but I know that it's symbolic of the degeneration of a nation. That's all. You say, well, why go on about it? I'm not going on about it. So I'm playing Beethoven. I'm giving you the positive as opposed to the negative. I'm giving you the alpha and the omega of the situation. That's what I'm doing here. in the news department, if that's what you want to do, you know, I mean, I can go there. Bush commuted the sentences of Ramos and Campion. Congratulations, George Bush. You finally did half the right thing. I mean, at least they released these guys out. What a story this is. And by the way, Ramos and Campion should thank conservatives. Particularly WorldNet Daily, I think, ran the best campaign to liberate them for the longest period of time. These are the U.S. Border Patrol agents. You can read the whole story on michaelsavage.com. Here's guys who were chasing a drug smuggler, Oswaldo Aldrete de Villa, as he was fleeing back to Mexico from a van load of marijuana. They shot him in the behind. They say in self-defense. The U.S. attorney down there threw the book at them, and Border Patrol agents were given 11 or 12 years, I don't know how many, and the drug dealer was allowed to testify against them. And by the way, the drug dealer was subsequently rearrested for dealing drugs, and they weren't pardoned. Over 100 congressmen and women begged the president to pardon them. Do you know that even Dianne Feinstein, the liberal, joined conservatives saying their sentence was way off the board after they studied the evidence, and Bush would not pardon them until today? But hold on, he really didn't pardon them. He commuted their sentence. And what does that mean? What do you mean he commuted their sentences rather than actually pardoning them? This means rather than recognizing their innocence, he just let them go with time served. You see what I mean? They lost their jobs, they lost their pensions, and they're in jail now, I think, since 2005. This is because they did their jobs defending the borders of the United States of America against drug dealers. You hear this? I don't know, maybe we should do a fundraiser for Ramos and Campion. I don't know what they're going to do for a living now. You know, maybe they need money. We should raise some money for them and try to help them at some point. If the government can do this to innocent Border Patrol agents, imagine what they can do to you. 1-800-449-8255. There's some other stories on michaelsavage.com. Halfway down on the, well, way down on the left, there's a video from San Francisco. Ethnic gang nearly beats boy to death. The ethnic gang was of color. The boy was white. He was trying to defend the girl who they were beating up, and they tried to kick him to death. I'll be right back.
Savage.
African-American sleeping in the White House legally. And she is sleeping there not as a kept woman like Sally Hemings. She is sleeping there as a First Lady of the United States of America. But hold on, sisters. Hold on, sisters. You can one day be sleeping there as the first female president of the United States of America. Stand up!
Wow. So we haven't gone far enough, according to Jeremiah Wright. Whew. Just think. Oprah Winfrey could do it. Now a teacher wants to expel Huck Finn from schools. Some guy named John Foley, he's a low-level teacher, says that he wants to get rid of Mark Twain's The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. And that is because it has the N-word in it. And he wants to replace it with a more modern, less discomforting novel documenting the epic journey of discovery. He said the time has arrived to update the literature we use in high school classrooms. He wrote in a guest column this month for the dying Seattle Post-Intelligencer. Now you know why they can't sell a newspaper. He said, Barack Obama is president-elect of the United States, and novels that use the N-word repeatedly need to go, said Foley. And he said, year after year, he patiently explains to his students that Jim, a black man, is actually the hero of the novel, and that Huck comes to see the error of his ways and commits to helping Jim escape slavery. But that's not good enough for him, because the kids don't want to wait that long to read the whole book to find out that Jim is actually the hero of the book. They just want to see the race in it. And he said, while we're getting rid of Huck Finn, he wants to get rid of To Kill a Mockingbird as well. He wants to get rid of Harper Lee's classic about racial inequality in the Deep South. And he wants to also get rid of John Steinbeck's Of Mice and Men. That should be removed from the curriculum, too, said this jerk who can't write his way out of a paper bag in his op-ed. He said, this is not censorship. He says, this is not censorship at all. This is very important, is that we get rid of these books. Not burn them, but get rid of Mice and Men by Steinbeck. Get rid of To Kill a Mockingbird. Get rid of Huckleberry Finn. And replace it with the kind of rubbish that's the equivalent of rap music, in order to make the children feel more comfortable. More comfortable. 1-800-449-8255, phone number. You want to call me on that? What are you going to say that I haven't said already? We haven't really talked about the Martin Luther King Jr. Day. I mean, I can ask you again. I'll tell you what I believe, since all you care about is what I think. I believe Martin Luther King Jr. Day should be changed to Civil Rights Day. The reason I say that is because we used to have Washington's birthday and Lincoln's birthday. Those names were removed by the left wing in this country. They were rolled into President's Day. And yet we now have a national holiday for a man's name. It's not Washington, it's not Lincoln, but it's Martin Luther King Jr. In that sense, what's not fair here is that they took away Washington's name, they took away Lincoln's name, and they gave us Martin Luther King Jr. Day. So if you want to celebrate civil rights and the civil rights movement, okay, great step for humanity. Let's call it Civil Rights Day. Why call it Martin Luther King Jr. Day? And if you want to call it Martin Luther King Jr. Day, then give us back George Washington's birthday, since he was a greater man than Martin Luther King Jr. And Lincoln, give us back Lincoln's Day, because Lincoln's name in a day, because Lincoln was a greater man than Martin Luther King Jr. That's my opinion. I do not give you the news. I tell you how to think about the news and what to think about the news. That's my opinion. It's one man's opinion. 1-800-449-8255. Can we move on? The callers have been stuck like on hold here. Let's see what else is in the news. Let's see. He can save us. He's going to save us? Obama's going to save me? The only one who ever saved me was me. And my prayers. That's the only thing that ever saved me and my family. Let me put it to you that way. No government ever saved me. All they do is take from me. They never gave me anything. Are you kidding me? You expect the government to save you? What are you, crazy? How can he save you? He's going to take from those who are workers and give it to those who are non-workers. He's going to take from those who are legal citizens and give it to illegal aliens. I don't understand what your thinking is here. Anyway, what am I going to say here? Still have a recession. I don't see it. I don't know. Every night I go to a restaurant, they're full. Where's the recession? I don't see it. Crowded with the Crayola people. Every day the children are out of school. Do they ever go to school anymore? I mean, I know this was a 3-day weekend. I went in a restaurant last night with friends, two couples. There they were, Crayolas. No matter what time I time it, there it is, the Crayola couple is there in the back. And the children now, when they're through eating, they run through the restaurant. No one stops them. They can't stop, and they get sued for some kind of childrenism, childist, infantilist. I don't know what they can get sued for, interfering with Johnny's rotten behavior. So, and for lunch today, I ate in a Vietnamese restaurant. I figured I'd change it around here in San Francisco. Came into the city, came to the studio. The streets are kind of dead. Not as dead as a Sunday, but, you know, when they close down the governmental offices in San Francisco, that's about 80% of the workforce. In San Francisco, 80% of the people seem to work for either the city, state, or federal government. So the deadbeats are all home today. But there were still people on the streets. The 20% of work in private industry were here. I went into some Vietnamese place. I mean, I've been there once before. It was so loud in there. They were screaming so loud that I would imagine if a Vietnam vet ate in there, he could have a flashback and try to kill everyone at an adjacent table with a piece of cutlery. That's what I imagined. It got so loud, I didn't know what to do. You ever get a panic attack from the noise in a restaurant? I almost had one today. It was a table of the biggest goofs in the world screaming. Hey, I hate people who laugh at their own jokes. So after they left, I was gagging on my lunch. It was so hot, it was boiling in the clay pot. It was quite good. No grease in there. Next to me comes in a younger couple. I said, okay, thank God, they'll be quiet. She was a self-laugher. And he was a self-laugher. They were about in their young 30s. She says something, goes, then he says something, goes, then she says something, goes, then he says something, goes, what is that all about? What is this about people laugh at their own inanities? I don't get this. So I was trapped. It was halfway over the meal. I didn't know whether to pack it up and take it out, eat it in the studio. Then I figured by the time I get it home, it would have spilled down my pants or something. And you don't know what to do in these situations. I didn't know whether to tell you about it. I figured maybe on Martin Luther King Jr. Day, I can go into this Vietnamese restaurant and have a peaceful something or other. But no, not my luck. Wherever you go, the rubes are everywhere. The Lilliputians are everywhere. They don't even know how to eat. Their parents didn't even teach them manners in a restaurant. It's the same thing with walking down a sidewalk. You get the rubes from the suburbs and from out of town. They don't understand that there are rules for walking on a crowded sidewalk in a city. It's like on the right, the people are going this way, and on the left, the people are going that way. They congregate and take over a whole block where you want to push them into the... What is this? They don't know how to walk in the street. How about the people who walk quickly up behind you? If you're walking down a street, how about some idiot who tailgates you, physically tailgates you? Now, if you're a suspicious character as I am, and rightly so, I come to an abrupt halt, usually trying to force them to crash into me, because I can't stand idiots of any kind. And I usually come to a halt, and they didn't even learn how to walk on a sidewalk. Where did they grow up? They grew up in the Midwest. They come to the big city. They don't know the rules of the big city. So they're the ones who tell a joke at a restaurant and laugh at their own joke, or scream inappropriately, or walk behind you and crash into your hindquarters in front of a plate glass window. Is it any wonder I love city life?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is going to be some doozy of a week. This is going to be awful. What a week I got to live through. Monday, Martin Luther King Jr. Day, and the media in their insanity mode. Tomorrow, insanity. Wednesday, bigger insanity. Then the people all go home. What are they going to do when they get home? How are they going to go back to work? Well, most of them don't actually work who went to the inauguration. If you'll notice, they don't have jobs. That's why they can afford to go to inauguration in the middle of a work week. Either they have a government job, or they don't work at all, maybe a foundation grant. Because, as I said to you, here in the streets of San Francisco, there's about 20% of the workforce is here. In that, about 50-60% of the city is city, state, or federal workers. There are still 20% of the people who pay the bills. That's us. So here we are, 1-800-449-8255. I do not give you the news. You can get that anywhere on the web or from your local newspaper. That's a throwaway joke. Yeah, get it from the Seattle Post-Intelligencer while you still can. I tell you how to think about the news. What to think about the major news stories. At least, that, I mean, that's the only job I... What do you think my job is? Give you the news? You can get it from any website. Quicker in 2 seconds you can get it. So what are you listening to me for? Because I'm telling you what the news story means to me. And since that's what I think, it isn't necessarily that's what you think, but at least you have one man's opinion, which is more than you're going to get from the television jerks who don't give you really any opinion. What they do is give you a script that someone wrote, a guy with curly hair and big glasses in the back room, whatever he thinks, not the talking head. Would you like to talk about any of these topics? You can, whatever you want. Whatever you want to talk about. Global warming. Yeah, they're freezing to death. The inauguration, have to wear gloves and parkas. You're freezing to death, but that, and Al Gore's nowhere to be seen, like the, I forget the animal, the woodchuck, I don't know, What's the animal that hides? Groundhog. Al Groundhog Gore. Whenever there's a frigid front, he disappears and goes undercover. He only comes out on a hot August day and says there's global warming. And the global warming enthusiasts who think that there's only a few seconds left to save the Earth all come out and say, see, that proves there's global warming. The Border Patrol agent commutation is a big story that Bush finally did the right thing. I mean, when 100 congressmen come out and say you did the wrong thing, commute their sentence, give them a amnesty, and it includes liberals and conservatives, you know Bush did the wrong thing. I mean, that wasn't Bush. It was Johnny Sutton, I think was his name, the U.S. prosecutor in Texas. We had hoped that Bush would commute their sentences a long time ago. I only wish that I had read today that he commuted the sentence of Randy Duke Cunningham, but Randy Duke Cunningham did not have anyone behind him. I'm the only one who talked about it. It's funny, I never met the man. Maybe I'll visit him in prison. Maybe I should do that. Maybe I should start doing things like that instead of working at an animal shelter or giving out turkey to the homeless. They don't need the homeless don't need turkey anyway. What they need is crack. The homeless don't want a turkey sandwich. They want a nice a crack pipe and crack cocaine. What do they want a turkey sandwich for? They don't want to eat. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Oh, I can't wait when he doesn't save the world. I just can't wait when Obama doesn't save the world, what you're going to see, the justifications. Wow, it's going to be something. It's going to be something. $170 million for an inauguration from a man who's going to save the poor. Oh, yeah. Hey, what about that civilian police force that Obama said he wanted to create? You get an eerie feeling that he takes 3 million unemployed youth from the inner city, and instead of giving them brown shirts, he gives them green shirts, and he gives them the authority to go from house to house to see what your electrical use is, that they have the right, the federal government's right, to enter your house to see what kind of energy use you're committing to. And if they see any violations, they can mark your house for, something that the green fascists would want done to you. Houston, Texas, Gary, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. I believe you are incorrect in your position on Ramos and Campion. Reason I do is in the performance of their duties, they falsified evidence, falsified reports, and basically tried to cover up what may have been an incorrect action on their part. And anybody.
Well, that's very noble of you. Why don't you go to the East Texas neighborhood in which they live, and why don't you give that speech on a soapbox? See what Ramos and Campion's neighbors and family think of that.
I live in Texas. What they did was committed a crime. They falsified evidence. That's a crime.
Well, perhaps they should have been given the death penalty by your analysis.
No, sir. The severity of the crime may be in question, but they committed a crime and should be punished for that crime.
I mean, their crime was chasing a drug dealer back to Mexico who fired at them and they fired back? That was a crime?
No, sir. The crime was falsifying evidence, covering up evidence to try to protect themselves for firing.
For doing their job, because they knew that the fascist government that they worked for would crucify them. So they covered up evidence to save their own skin. In that regard, you're right. And, of course, they only got 12 years for it. And you do know the drug dealer was allowed to testify against them, Gary, correct?
Yes, they didn't serve 12 years.
Oh, sir, wait a minute. You do know that the government, the fascistic governmental agency that did this to them, actually gave the drug dealer amnesty and let him testify against them. And then you do know that that very same drug dealer was arrested soon thereafter for smuggling drugs. Isn't that correct?
Yes, that is true.
So, in other words, if they had shot this guy in the back and hit him in the head and killed him, they would have killed one drug dealer. We'd have one less drug dealer. Isn't that correct?
If they had performed their duties and not tried to falsify evidence, had they have gone and
how would you have suggested they perform their duty?
Not falsify and cover up the evidence.
Well, you keep going back like a broken record. Why did 100 congressmen, liberals and conservatives alike, say that they were unfairly targeted by George Bush's prosecutor, Mr. Sutton?
For anyone else. All I can tell you is from the evidence.
Don't say all you can tell. Why would 100 congressmen, liberals and conservatives, have said that they were railroaded? Let's put it to you that way. Why?
I believe that it is better for political gain than anything.
So you're telling me they weren't crucified for political reasons?
No.
You're saying a 12-year sentence wasn't too harsh?
Who gave him the sentence? The Congressman George Bush didn't. It was by a jury of his peers.
What do you do for a living? I'm curious, Gary. Are you a Border Patrol agent?
No, sir. I am not.
Are you a prosecutor?
No.
Gary?
Who works?
Gary, what do you do for a living? Do you work for the government? Gary, you're breaking up. Can you? Let's try again. Gary, what do you do for a living? That's all. End of story. Obviously, he works for the government. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Well, the big news story is that Bush has commuted the sentences of former border agents Ramos and Compion. I mean, it's too little too late for most of us. And you should understand this is a victory for talk radio. I wouldn't say that it's my job. I didn't do the most on this. But the fact of the matter is, it was conservatives and talk radio that finally saw justice done in terms of Ramos and Compion. The liberals, of course, wanted them in jail because they're racist, number one, and these are Latinos, and they like them in jail. They like Latinos in jail, liberals do, despite what they say. And, of course, they want open borders. So the best way to have open borders and drugs flowing across the border is to frighten Border Patrol agents. So that's why the liberals were silent when these guys were railroaded by George Bush and the prosecutor. They liked it. You understand how this works? New York, WOR, Brendan, you're on the Savage Nation.
This lack of pardon and the commutation for these Border Patrol agents is a message loud and clear that this government doesn't want our borders protected. He could just as easily have pardoned these guys. But this was done so to send a message to all other Border
Patrol. All their convictions, except obstruction of justice, were upheld on appeal. You know that Bush commuted their sentence because he wanted one of the charges to stick. You understand that? Bush didn't pardon the men for their crimes, but decided to commute their prison sentences because he said they were excessive and that they had already suffered the loss of their jobs, their freedom, and reputations. That's what he did.
And I believe so much is being made about Obama being the first African-American president, not because it's a milestone. It's because the country is being overtaken by a Hispanic population, which is not going to get any attention while Obama's president.
Well, I don't know how one thing leads to another, but I do know this. Isn't it true that Obama had a white mother?
Yes.
Why do we keep hearing he's a black president? I mean, there is a correct term for Obama, and it's not black or white. You know that. But the term is antiquated and somewhat embarrassing, and no one uses it anymore. He's of mixed-race heritage. Why do they keep saying the first black president? He's not black. By definition, he's not black. He is of mixed-race heritage. Why is that not good enough? Why is that not good enough? Why can't we let it go already?
God forbid.
Why? You know why? Because the liberals don't want to let it go. They don't want to let it go. Okay, whatever. Let them do what they want. It's a free country. Let's see what he actually does. Thus far, he's done nothing but put out hot air. Thus far, all Obama's given us is hot air. And I guess that's enough for millions and millions of lemmings. The lemmings love it. The lemmings live on hot air. They need hope. They need a dream and hope. And they've got a hope and dream. Nothing wrong with that. Hope springs eternal. So there they are in Washington, dancing around $170 million coronation, dancing in front of the golden idol of the coronation. And they think it's doing something good for humanity. It just shows you. It just shows you. Just unbelievable. Biden as vice president, that hack they dug up, none of it makes sense to me. But we'll see. What do you think he's going to do? Raise taxes and take from those who earn and give it to those who don't. That's all. 18 degrees Fahrenheit on inauguration night and it's global warming. It's unkind. Liberals demand arrest Bush now. Did you hear that Newsweek will stop publishing weekly? Yeah, I linked it up on michaelsavage.com. That's not one of my favorite mainstream publications. There are others. There's some that I really would hate to see go. That's not one of them. They don't do really much of a job. Do I still have it up or it's gone already? Newsweek may stop weekly circulation. Battered by a 1-2 punch of declining readership and ad pages, Newsweek magazine is getting a extreme makeover this year. Who reads it? What do you need Newsweek for when you get News Second or News Nanosecond on the internet? What do you need Newsweek for? That was when they had delivery by those fumy trucks. Remember the age when the newspaper came and people waited for the newspaper? Okay, that was an age. It's gone. It's gone. Now, don't get me wrong. I mean, I need newspapers. I need good reporters. The LA Times has some good articles. New York Times has some good articles. I know what their orientation and bias is. But they're great newspapers in terms of their research. And it would be a horrible thing to lose those reporters, the good ones. You know, the commentators, I don't know, they must have an audience, not a very big one, but they're commentators, but they're not reporters. The reporters are what we're talking about here. There's an important story for you to read on michaelsavage.com from the local paper. Brutal murder of sushi man defies explanation. It's a terrible story. It's frightened a lot of people in the city. A Japanese man who had no known enemies went to a copy shop in the middle of the day last week, and he went back to his car in the garage when a man of Chinese descent approached him and almost cut his head off with a knife. Now, there was no relationship between the brutal knifer and the sushi man. None. They never met each other, so far as anyone knows, before. It was a random attack. And interestingly enough, a white man and his grandson stopped the killer before he killed them. He came to them next with the knife. And this older man and his grandson detained him until the police came. But the story has frightened a lot of people to show you the mad people running the streets of San Francisco. He was a crazy man. By all definition, the guy who cut the sushi man's throat was crazy. He belonged in a mental hospital in a padded cell. And he had had a history of doing weird things. He should have been locked up a long time ago. But because of liberalism, the mental disorder, the mentally disabled are put onto the streets on the assumption that by integrating them into general society, they'll behave better. They don't ever behave better. They usually do their thing. And sometimes doing their thing means doing their violent thing. So Peter C. Fong should have been in prison. But the system would not imprison him because liberalism, being the mental disorder, believes in leaving mentally disordered people on the streets. And he cut Yoshioka's throat during a chance encounter in a store parking lot. It's unbelievable to me. Fong, age 45, was restrained by two passerbys before he could kill anyone else. That's a whole story unto itself. Detained two passerbys. He tried to kill them. They ought to tell you a whole story about them and what heroes they are. You didn't hear much about their heroism because, A, they were white, and B, they detained the madman. And, of course, that's not heroism in San Francisco. Anyone who actually stops a mad killer from performing in San Francisco is considered somehow of a throwback. They're throwbacks. John Surinchuk, a 64-year-old Universal Anglican priest, came upon the blood-soaked Fong and, with the help of Patrick Spangler, his 18-year-old grandson, subdued Fong until police arrived. They didn't just subdue him. He tried to kill them. Idiots, subdue him. No one had any idea how bad he was. Oh, really? A lot of people had an idea how bad he was. He threatened people day and night. Day and night he was threatening everybody. Women, men, it didn't matter. He should have been in a bug house. Along with the mayor and the board of supervisors, they should all be in the bug house in this crazy city. It's freaked people out, really freaked them out. There's a lot of violently insane people walking the streets of San Francisco, and you don't know when they're going to come upon you. That's why you need a conceal and carry permit. That's why California should become a right-to-carry state. Now, I don't know if Yoshioka could have, I don't think he could have killed him in time, because he came at him out of nowhere and cut his throat. The next people who saw him coming at them, with the knife, should have shot him dead in the hallway there. And we would have been saved the trial and the bleeding heart liberal saying that he's mentally ill and he deserves a break.
Savage.
There's an interesting posting that just came up about my comment. It says, radio talk show's Michael Savage recently posted something called Production Notes on his website, which talks about how we could go from, quote, Beethoven as the cultural zenith to gutter rapsters in one single degeneration, close quote. And then Andrew T. Durham says, as someone who plays seven instruments proficiently, I could relate to this. And if you read his blog, he concludes this way. The answer to Savage's question is based in a total lack of discipline in this society, coupled with white guilt that forces the weak to kiss the backside of those who didn't earn where they end up. Once the society loses its ability to reward on merit, there is no reason to excel. We have proven that famously, and we are about to see it get much, much worse. You're not kidding, Andrew. Just wait until tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow, and you'll see what white guilt has wrought. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. MichaelSavage.com is the website. San Diego is the city. Donald is the caller. He's on the Savage Nation. Donald, go ahead. What's on your mind?
Hello, Michael. Long-time listener. Good to talk to you. The thing that you do for us, Michael, is you give us insight and you make it interesting. And you're one of those men that is well-rounded. You can talk about anything. That's why we are attracted to you, because those of us that are interesting need insight, and we crave it rather than the falsehoods that we're given every day.
Well, anyway, as I said, let me go back to that, then I'll let you finish. I said at the beginning, and this is something new to the show, I said I do not give you the news, because people can get that from the web, and they do it all day long if they're interested in the news. What I do is I tell people how to think about the news and what to think about the major news stories. That's all I can do. You call that opinion, but that's basically what I'm doing.
Well, I agree completely. And, again, you keep it interesting, you change it up, and there's always plenty to talk about. I want to talk about the soon-to-be President Obama, and you will know this because you lived in Hawaii like I did. My dad was in the Navy. My brother was born at Tripler Army Hospital on Oahu in 1960, and my brother has a certified copy of a birth certificate from the state of Hawaii. We never heard of a certified copy of a live birth until Barack started running for president.
Oh, yeah, that's a big scandal that I think will go nowhere, because it's a fait accompli and nobody wants to dig that up. But what else is on your mind?
Well, the other point about him lacking class is because you have to remember he grew up with a white mother in Hawaii back in the day when brothers weren't necessarily embraced. He went to Punahou High School, which you know and I know is where the rich Hawaiian kids and the rich Hawaiian Japanese and the rich white boys went to school. He didn't learn what it was like to be black until he moved to Chicago. So consequently, he's nothing more than a rock and roll freak, which is why we got the Jimi Hendrix pictures after he was elected. He's a dope and smoker, heavy metal guy.
We don't have to run him down. He's very intelligent. He's super articulate. He's extremely left wing. It's his politics that I'm concerned about, not his race, not his origins. I'm more concerned about his orientation to the far left, Donald. That's what I'm focused on.
Well, that's the point. Remember Hawaii in the late 70s going to Punahou High School and what he was exposed to. He was exposed to the whole hippie mentality. So that is what his mantra is, and he is just...
Well, but, you know, a lot of people change over time. He's a very smart Machiavellian man. He's used the left to become president. Make no mistake about it. They think they found the ultimate candidate in an articulate man who's multiracial. He could appeal to women. He could appeal to different races. And they were right. They got him elected. But what they don't know now is that he's the president, not them. And they don't know what he's liable to do. He's liable to turn out to be more to the left than we fear, or more to the center than they would wish. We don't know where he's going to go, Donald.
Well, you're absolutely right. And one thing, if I could change the subject, about Rama Sakopian, it's a disgrace that they weren't pardoned, not just commuted. And after the election on, Veterans Day, they had to have all the World War II movies. And I saw this, Michael, the longest day about D-Day, and it was interesting because the Germans were trying to get intelligence. They were listening to coded messages from the French resistance, and I watched that, and I said, my God, that's what we've turned into America today. So for all my brothers out there, I want to say the coded word. Bob has a big nose. Bob has a big nose.
All right, I have no idea what that means, but have a nice day. Here's a coded message. Borders, language, culture. Borders, language, culture. Come in, America. You know, speaking about my ability to fluctuate rapidly on subjects and give you some information because of my vast education and experience, and make no mistake about it, there's no substitute for higher education. You can fake it, but you can't do it for very long. When you spend years reading, After all, you know, a higher degree is about reading and then writing a dissertation if you get a real degree. When you spend years reading thousands of books and scientific articles, you learn things. But this morning, someone was on the air, and I'm not going to mention who. He's pretty famous in talk radio. He was talking about the fact that Al-Qaeda is being decimated by the plague. And then he went on about a 2 or 3 minute run where he said, well, you know what the plague is, don't you? And he was buying time trying to get his staff. He was pretending he was telling the audience they didn't know what the plague was, but I knew it was because he didn't know what the plague was. And he was waiting for some cliff notes from his staff. And then one of them said something to him, and he said, well, we know it's a viral infection. Well, of course it isn't. It's not a virus. The plague is a bacterial infection. But you see, when you spend your life spinning records and then playing golf, and then you fake it as a water boy for the Bush administration, and you're nothing but Boy George for the Republican Party, how could you know that plague is not a is not a viral infection that is spread by, of course, he knew fleas because he got it from Wikipedia within 2 minutes. But the point I'm making is, why would he bring that up if he didn't have the answers? It didn't make him sound too smart. And what I'm getting at is, you know, your education level shows at a certain point in radio. There's another guy, a local guy here, who tries to use a lot of big words. His first name is Queen. We won't tell you the rest of his name. Let's say his first name rhymes with Queen, but we won't tell you what his name is in the Bay Area. His first name rhymes with Queen. Now, here's a man who's not formally educated, but he uses large words continuously in order to impress people with his erudite learning. That's another mark of the person who's not well-educated, is using too many large words too often. That's usually a mark of an inferiority complex. And these are things that you learn. It's a giveaway, that's all. I'm going to tell you, when I went to college, the junior professors, the assistant professors, would get up in front of the blackboard and just put formulas, and they would blizzard. It was so complicated, you got terrified. And they told you you were going to get a test every other day, and you had to do this and do that. And you got scared before you could leave the room. Of course, that was because they themselves were scared, and they were trying to impress you with complexity because they didn't truly understand their subject matter. And the older guy who would come in, I never forget, I had a great genetics professor. He was the old man, the dean of the chairman of the department. He came in, he explained genetics simply, plain English, no background. I understood what he was talking about. He didn't make a big deal about grades. Kids would come to him and he would say, what grade do you want? He said, well, if you're going to medical school, you need an A, so I'll give you an A. Then he did that. And everyone was relaxed. Because he relaxed you, you learned a lot. I think he gave me a B because I wasn't going to medical school. It didn't matter. But the point is that he was a great professor, and he made it simple. He didn't use large scientific terms. He said DNA instead of deoxyribonucleic acid. You know what I'm saying? He would say LSD instead of lysergic acid diethylamide. I'll be right back. Oh, no, I can't. No. Savage Nation. We're talking about Obama's mixed race heritage and why they keep referring to him as the first black president. We're talking about Martin Luther King Jr. Day, which I think should be called Civil Rights Day. We're talking about Bush commuting the sentences of Ramos and Campi and the Border Patrol agents who were arrested and tried and unfairly given a 12-year or more sentence for doing their job of chasing a drug dealer. And of course, we're also talking about the music. I mean, I played Beethoven's Ninth, and we talked about that on the show today. I also mentioned that here we are in the middle of the worst economic downturn since the Great Depression, and $170 million or more is being spent on the coronation of Barack Obama. $170 million. It's a lot of porta potties. Houston, Texas. Tom, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, sir. I think that anybody should spend their money in the way they want to. It's good for the economy, I think. Hello?
It's good for the economy. It's good for the economy. But there's something wrong with your thinking. Why would employees at banks, brokerages, and Wall Street firms donate $7 million to Barack Obama's coronation?
Well, it's all, you know, one hand washes the other, isn't it?
Yeah, it's one hand washes the other. It's called payola.
That's what, Paul, sure.
So, in other words, it's not really it's good for the economy. It's good for selected people in the economy.
Right. The other thing is the Bush commuted the sentences where these people are going to get out March 20th. He should have pardoned them. That's what he should have done.
Oh, I agree with you on that. I certainly agree with you on that, but he didn't want to. He wanted to give them still wanted to leave them with a black eye, you know.
Yep. I see you're over by Clay Lacy.
You see the picture of me with the Clay Lacy airplane?
Yeah, you know, you can go for a ride in Crazy Horse. It's down in Florida. It's a P-51. It's got two seats in it. And
I had Clay Lacy on the show on Thursday or Friday. Everyone missed that. I'm surprised you didn't hear that. Thanks for the call. Besides Wall Street firms, a lot of money came from companies such as Microsoft, Google, and DreamWorks. Microsoft CEO Steve Ballmer and his wife Connie each gave $50,000. Bill Gates and his wife Melinda each gave $50,000. DreamWorks CEO Jeff Katzenberg and his so-called wife Marilyn each gave $50,000. Filmmaker and DreamWorks co-founder and man swindled by Bernie Madoff, Steven Spielberg, and his wife Kate also both gave $50,000. Billionaire investor George Soros gave $250,000 to the inauguration. Now, why would they do this? Other big-name donors who gave $50,000 include filmmaker George Lucas, Dodgers president Jamie McCourt, Citigroup managing director Raymond McGuire, Oracle president Charles Phillips Jr., Halle Berry and Sharon Stone. She still has $50,000, Sharon Stone, left over from the marriage? And Melvin Simon, co-founder of Simon Property Group, the largest mall owner in the United States, gave $50,000. Why is that? What do you think they're going to get from it? That's a lot of money, my friends. You'd think the left would be screaming bloody murder about it, but they're saying nothing. You know how it works. All right. You know, we're going to sit here with sour grapes. So he won. Now what? He's going to bring change. Yeah, change. Everyone around is a Clintonite. Some change. Alternate energy. Again, get out the violin. Alternate energy. You mean his limousine runs on banana peels? You mean Air Force One's going to be running on banana peels? Alternate energy. God, you people are gullible. God, you're gullible. I have clean-burning diesel. What do you need alternate energy for? It works like a charm. My older boat is a stink pot. The newer boat, the little one with the three-cylinder Yanmar, is clean as a whistle. No smoke, no noise. I play Billy Bones on the boat the dog hates. He's scared to death of the little boat, the 20-footer. I don't know what he's afraid of. He likes the big boat, doesn't get scared. A little boat, he sits there shaking the whole time. I talk to him about it. I say, Teddy, he looks at the water. He looks like a child, scared, like shivering. It's frightening. I don't know what he's afraid of. He grew up on the water. Play Billy Bones for me. That's what I want to hear before the... I think I'm going to go out and get drunk tonight. I don't know. I'm not even polite about it. I don't even have a drink. I feel like getting bashed. Oh, my God. Watch Obama officially elected president. Spare me. That's tomorrow. I got to watch it. Good morning to you, Charming Billy. William Ayers wasn't up there. Yeah, he's like Lincoln. How did he become like Lincoln? He didn't do anything yet. Lincoln freed the slaves. What did this guy do? He freed the Chicago political machine and gave him everything I've always dreamed of. I don't know. I'm not buying into it that he's some great man. What has he done yet that's great? I don't get it. And Joe Biden? Woo, another prize. Like two prizes out of the Cracker Jacks box, him and Biden. But they believe in it. People believe in it. All the money, all those porta potties. You know who's making the money? The people who run the porta potty businesses. Look into who they are. The caterers, look into who they are. Smithsonian employees, they spend $700,000 to keep that museum open longer. Security officers, see who's running the security companies. That's where the money's going. Follow the money, stupid. Sure, it's an economic stimulus benefiting the little guys. As long as they run a porta potty business, as long as they run a catering company, as long as they run a security company, you get it? That's where the money's going. That's where it's going. So you say it's helping the economy. And, of course, if you're a banker or a brokerage, it's going to help you, too, in some kind of blowback. You're going to get something from it. Don't you think it would have been a better symbol of change and hope if the man would have said, you know, people, I really appreciate your worship. I know that you need to worship a golden idol and a false god, but for the sake of my own ego and such, I don't need it. I'd like you to take all these donations you want to give me, and I'd like you to give it to the following charities that were robbed by Bernie Madoff under the watch of Barney Frank and George Bush. But he didn't do that. You understand? KNEW, San Fran Psycho. Jim, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, first, thank you for continuing to broadcast Radio Free America. I'm calling with regards to the coronation of Barack Obama.
Oh, yes.
And as striking parallels to the placement of Julius Caesar as sole dictator of Rome in 33 B.C.
Well, there's no opposition to him in Washington, if that's what you mean. We may as well have a dictatorship. There are no Republicans left. Well, there's one or two from the South, but they're considered anachronisms in this day and age of, 400 people saying A to what the president wants.
Well, Caesar rose to power on the power of the mob's beliefs and hopes. They were poor, they were decadent, and Caesar promised them everything.
Well, there you go. That's what we're waiting for, waiting to see how fast and how far the country falls under Obama. Just how fast he rips off the middle class and destroys it. Everyone's fear is that little-known speech where he said he wanted to create a civilian police corps that reported directly to him. Now, if he means that he's going to take 3 million unemployed youth from the inner city, the rap lovers, and put them in green uniforms and let them patrol the suburbs, then we'll know that he was really serious about his desire for reform and change.
Well, fortunately, Caesar only lasted 3 years, but the other thing...
Is that where the Caesar salad came from?
Did they have
that dressing in ancient Rome, that Caesar salad dressing?
The correct answer to that.
I got to find out where it came. Those anchovies. Do they have anchovies in ancient Rome? What do I know if they had anchovies, Caesar dressing? What do I care? Which Caesar are you talking about? They were all Caesars. Which particular Caesar do you mean? You know when you say Caesar, which Caesar do you mean? Which dictator of ancient Rome do you mean? There were many emperors. There were various Caesars. So this is not our first dictator. We had just got rid of one. Dictator Bush just left. Caesar Bush just left. He represented a certain segment of the population. Look, the country was turned over to the old line WASP guard under George Bush. Do you want to clear the air in a minute or less? Let's do it in a minute or less. You say, oh, we don't want this multiracial guy in the office. He's liable to ruin the country. Oh, really? We just had 8 years of an old line WASP, George Bush. All of his cronies were in charge of everything in the government. And take a look at where we are. He bankrupted the Treasury. Do I have to go down the litany? I mean, really, can't you people come to understand that it doesn't matter who gets the job? Fundamentally, they're figureheads, the way the Queen of England is a figurehead of England. Obama's a figurehead. All you have to do is look at the people he's appointed, and you will know he's a figurehead. Does it make sense for him to have appointed Leon Panetta to be the director of the CIA when Panetta has no security experience whatsoever, and there's no outcry about this? Does it make any sense for him to take the retread Hillary Clinton and make her Secretary of State when she has no foreign policy experience whatsoever, unless you consider trading in cattle futures foreign policy experience? So, as I'm saying, the same power structure that gave us 8 years of Clinton, then 8 years of Bush, are now about to give us, 40 years of Obama? I'd be surprised if we ever have an election again, the way things are going. I would be surprised if we ever have an election again, the way things are going. That's why I'm playing Beethoven. Because this is the music you want to hear in the last days of Western civilization. The epitome of Western civilization.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is not a week to be divisive, and this is not a week to be opposing things. It's very challenging this week to do anything more than applaud and recognize that it's historic.
The coming political pilgrimage to Washington is similar to another grand event in both size and preparation. The Hajj.
It sounds like freedom for Ignacio Ramos and Jose Campion, those two former Border Patrol agents. Their case has become something of a cause célèbre. Now President Bush, in one of the final acts of his administration, has commuted their sentences.
I'll just call it Chocolate City. Can we do that? P-Funk, Chocolate City.
Here's what we've been discussing today on the Savage Nation. The curious and sensitive case of Obama's mixed race heritage. The far left and the far right are playing racial politics with Obama's presidency before he's even inaugurated. Racist liberals are pointing out his mixed race heritage because they feel he isn't black enough. They will blame anything bad he does on his white genes. Racist conservatives are pointing out his mixed race heritage as well. They will attribute anything good he does to his white genes and anything bad he does to his black genes. Martin Luther King Day is today. Does Martin Luther King deserve his own holiday? Do you think that Martin Luther King Jr. was more important than Abraham Lincoln? Should Martin Luther King Day be rejected in favor of a new holiday called Civil Rights Day? Today, Bush commuted the sentence of Ramos and Campion, the two Border Patrol agents who were chasing a drug dealer, shot the drug dealer in the behind, and went to jail for 11 years for doing their job. Do you think Bush should have pardoned them, as well as giving them, in essence, amnesty? Is this a case of too little, too late? In your mind, does this lessen Bush's liberal legacy, or is this just a token move? Okay, moving on. Now that Barack Obama is so close to coming into office, like a day away, he's promised to create millions of green jobs. And he's promised to do everything in his power to combat so-called global warming, even though we're going through a freezing spell. Well, even John McCain promised that if elected, he would be fighting what he called climate change. You know what my position on this is. Do I believe the climate can change? Of course. The climate has changed and will continue to change. But it's not a man-made phenomenon. A very smart man who has his facts straight in this matter is Selwyn Duke, a columnist who can be found at RenewAmerica.com. Selwyn, thanks for being back on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. It's great to be on the show again. Michael, we hear a lot about so-called global warming, and politicians can't talk enough about carbon taxes and credits and cleaner technologies. But are they just fiddling while Rome freezes? What I mean is, if the climate were a sentient adversary with a will, he just might be laughing right now. Because while mankind is running around doing a chicken little worrying about anthropogenic global warming, many scientists tell us that nature just might be preparing an attack we least expect. Another ice age. And for sure, many Americans feel like they're already in one with the winter we're having. Just consider this. Parts of Alaska have experienced temperatures reaching 78 degrees below zero. North Dakota had record December snow. A Minnesota sled dog race was actually canceled due to heavy snow. And Ohio ski resorts have called a recent winter storm, quote, a stimulus package for their industry, unquote. Yet, critics may point out that this is anecdotal evidence and thus not scientifically significant. And this would be true only, in this case, the science just may coincide with the anecdotes. As to this, the Russian newspaper Pravda Online wrote just recently, quote, many sources of data which provide our knowledge base of long-term climate change indicate that the warm, 12,000-year-long Holocene period will rather soon be coming to an end, and then the Earth will return to Ice Age conditions for the next 100,000 years, unquote. Now, I'm inclined to believe this. Why? Because unlike anthropogenic global warming theory, whose predictions rest on the unprecedented and unproven, that is, a great climatic shift due to man's activities, this is less a prediction and more just a relation of natural cycles. It's much like if a man told you in August that due to human activities it was going to be warmer in January, while another man just smiled and said it would be colder, same as usual. Whose words would you likely heed? Well, given that you know about the cycles called seasons, you'd probably break out winter wear and not your swim trunks, I think. Well, likewise, The world also experiences much longer seasons, to put it figuratively. For example, science has identified 1,500-year cycles of warming and cooling. But the seasons, or cycles, in question here are even longer and more profound. Extended ice ages interrupted by relatively short warm periods. As Pravda explains, quote, ice cores, ocean sediment cores, the geologic record, and studies of ancient plant and animal populations all demonstrate a regular cyclic pattern of ice age glacial maximums, which each last about 100,000 years, separated by intervening warm interglacials, each lasting about 12,000 years, unquote. This is the pattern. And the old adage, the best predictor of future behavior is past behavior, applies to the planet as well as to people. Thus, unlike with anthropogenic global warming, it's not a matter of if another ice age will occur, only when. And when will this be? Experts are divided. Many believe it's only 50 to 150 years away, while the most optimistic among them say it may still be 1,000 or even 10,000 years off. Yet others bear a more ominous message, that it has already begun. Now, I know what you might be thinking. These seem much like the dubious predictions of global warming fearmongers. Yet one prediction is ironclad, and that is, an ice age world is a truly scary scenario. Now, is this statement just the twin brother of anthropogenic global warming alarmism? Well, if it is, it's the good twin. The reality is that, despite the dire warnings about the perils of a hotter Earth, such a prospect is far more appealing than a cooling one, as such an environment is actually highly conducive to the flourishing of life. As the Center for Global Food Issues points out, quote, a warmer planet has beneficial effects on food production. It results in longer growing seasons, more sunshine and rainfall, while summertime high temperatures change little. And a warmer planet means milder winters and fewer crop-killing frosts, unquote. Then there is the matter of carbon dioxide. If we listened to anthropogenic global warming alarmists, we'd believe it was a poison akin to cyanide gas or something. But in reality, it's actually a vital element of our atmosphere. Hey, higher levels of carbon dioxide encourage the growth of plant life. As the Center for Global Food Issues says, quote, based on nearly 800 scientific observations around the world, a doubling of CO2 from present levels would improve plant productivity on average by 32% across species, unquote. And by the way, this isn't theory, it's fact. It's precisely why botanists have long pumped CO2 into their greenhouses. Look, in reality, this is all common sense. Plants don't grow in an Arctic environment. In fact, most animals don't fare too well either. Just think about how our tropical jungles teem with millions of organisms, while the Arctic has relatively few. And if you had to play Survivor Man, you'd probably rather be dropped in the Amazon than the Yukon, right? As for the next ice age, whenever it does strike, it'll render most of the northern hemisphere inhospitable, if not uninhabitable, and for certain, we won't be able to sustain our large warm-era population using our current warm-era agricultural practices. If we're to have food, it'll have to be grown and raised indoors or via some other alternative method. We'll just have to adapt. And this is, of course, a key to surviving any radical environmental shift. But this process takes time, and that's a luxury we just may not have. Because while we might expect only a gradual transition from interglacial conditions to ice age ones, some experts say it could possibly occur very quickly as during a single year. You know, given this possibility, if I really believed in anthropogenic global warming, I'd recommend we follow China's lead and start mainlining coal. My slogan might be, increase your carbon footprint for the children. Unfortunately, though, it wouldn't work. As good scientists and bad politicians are demonstrating, carbon dioxide can be used to raise only one thing. Taxes. Michael, thank you for having me on the show, and God bless you and your audience.
Thank you, Selwyn. Very well done. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
I believe a person's state of mind is obviously important, and it's not something that can be fixed by popping a pill, at least not on a long-term basis. A psychiatrist who I admire a great deal and who we've had on this show before is Dr. Peter Breggin from Breggin.com. While most psychiatrists abandoned the idea of responsibility long ago, Dr. Breggin still holds it as a cherished value. Dr. Breggin, tell us your thoughts on this.
Thanks, Michael. This is Dr. Peter Breggin, and I am a psychiatrist. And I want to help you live like an American. Today's subject, the two keys to life. I am a very optimistic psychiatrist. I find that almost everyone who seeks help can be helped through encouragement and self-understanding. I believe that a good therapist is part inspirational and part guide, helping people to untangle their lives and especially helping them to live by better values and principles. But as optimistic as I am, I've had to face one big limitation in how much I can help. People cannot be helped until they become ready to take responsibility for their lives. This is true of all of us, you, me, all of us. To improve our lives, we have to be determined to look at our mistakes and to take charge of improving ourselves and our relationships. Responsibility is the first key to life. There's an old joke. How many psychiatrists does it take to change a light bulb? The answer is one. But first, the bulb has to want to change. So apparently, somebody else has noticed this truth, if only to make fun of it. But modern psychiatry doesn't seem to believe in people taking responsibility. Psychiatrists routinely tell their patients that they have biochemical imbalances and therefore cannot get better without drugs. These psychiatrists try to convince people that they need a change in their brains, right inside their brains, rather than a change in their attitudes. And it gets a lot worse when these psychiatrists almost always prescribe mind-numbing chemicals that make it harder, if not impossible, to take responsibility. Life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. Pursuit? What kind of pursuit? Most psychiatrists have no idea that people must pursue what they want in life, that they must have ideals and values and take responsibility for making them come true. Genuine help encourages responsibility. By responsibility, I mean a determination to give up feeling helpless and instead to take charge of our lives. It may not happen overnight, and caring guidance may prove valuable. I am a psychiatrist and a psychotherapist, but the individual must desire to become independent and self-determined. I also came to the conclusion as a psychiatrist that people need freedom in order to exercise responsibility. When patients are locked up against their will for what's called treatment, they are discouraged from taking responsibility for their lives. They commonly get worse. I had to give up the idea that I could force someone to get better. So as a psychiatrist on the front lines of helping people, and I've worked in state mental hospitals, hospitals, and of course decades in private practice, as a psychiatrist on these front lines, I learned this basic lesson. To improve their emotional lives, people need freedom and they need to take responsibility. I realized that freedom and responsibility were the twin keys, the two keys to life. Except, of course, when it came to thinking about politics and government, I got bamboozled. That was different. I still hoped that people in government could take responsibility for other people without making them more dependent and more helpless. Eventually, it dawned on me that there is no difference between what people need in a psychiatrist's office and what they need in the larger office of life and politics. I realized that the same principles, freedom and responsibility, apply everywhere. It does not matter where you or I live and where we're carrying on or acting or managing our lives, at home, in the office, in society as a citizen. We still bring along our basic human nature, and human beings thrive on freedom and responsibility. And we go to pot when we give up demanding freedom, and when we stop exercising responsibility. This was a revelation to me. The same principles apply to our individual lives and to our political lives. Only later would I discover that the Founding Fathers had figured this out a long, long time ago. More than 200 years ago, people like George Washington and John and Abigail Adams and Ben Franklin and James Madison wanted the new country to offer freedom to people so that they could then take responsibility for themselves. They wanted the United States to provide individuals with that freedom. And what do healthy people do with freedom and responsibility? They tend to work hard, to play hard, and to love a lot. They're usually very productive and very generous. That's why I like to call myself an American psychiatrist. I believe in defending freedom, and I believe in exercising responsibility all the time, everywhere, in all aspects of our lives. When we take responsibility for ourselves, we become more fulfilled, more productive, and more loving to the people in our lives. This brings me to what I call the primary principles, the refrain of my weekly report. Protect freedom. Take responsibility at all times. Express gratitude for all your gifts and opportunities. Become a source of love. This is Dr. Peter Breggin urging you to live like an American. You can find me at Breggin.com. That's Breggin.com. Now back to Michael.
Dr. Breggin, thanks for being on the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage.
The coming political pilgrimage to Washington is similar to another grand event in both size and preparation. The Hajj, the most important religious pilgrimage in the Muslim world.
Michelle Obama is the first African-American sleeping in the White House legally. And she is sleeping there. Not as a kept woman like Sally Hemings. She is sleeping there as a First Lady of the United States of America. But hold on, sisters. Hold on, sisters. You can one day be sleeping there as the first female president of the United States of America. Stand up!
This is not a week to be divisive, and this is not a week to be opposing things. It's very challenging this week to do anything more than applaud and recognize that it's historic.
We've begun a week of national hysteria. Every media channel is devoted to a nonstop Soviet-style celebration of Obama, even though he's done nothing. Even the supposedly conservative fixed news is going to get along well. I am not going along with this program. Liberals across America have reached a high point of insanity. If Obama asked them to jump off the top of a building, probably many of them would. If not by desire, then by the sheer accident of history. We could have another Jonestown if we're not careful. On a cultural level, we've gone from Beethoven as the musical zenith to gutter rapsters in only a single degeneration. Young musical types used to try to achieve greatness by aspiring to play Beethoven's Ninth. Today, they aspire to sing like a drug-dealing pimp. The same thing holds true for all other aspects of Western civilization. Young aspiring idealists once dreamed of being the next Louis Pasteur or Albert Einstein. Today we have thousands of mini Milkins with Madoff as the end of the line. And on top of all this, we have Martin Luther King Day today. Every year in the middle of January, America's marched through the same Stalinist routine of elevating Martin Luther King Jr. to the status of a god. Every year at the same time, it is impossible to escape the video clips, the audio clips, the pictures, the remembrances, the retrospectives, King the Merciful, King the Conqueror, King the Almighty. The characters in George Orwell's 1984 were forced to endure 2 minutes of hate focused against the enemies of the state. Today we are forced to endure 24 hours of love mandated by the government media complex. Martin Luther King Jr. may have done some good for some blacks in this country, but he was not a god, but a man, and a deeply flawed one at that. We now know that he was a plagiarist. We know for sure that he was an adulterer. We know he had connections to the Communist Party. It is time to end the celebration of this separatist holiday. Nothing could be more un-American and racist than a holiday which exalts one race over another. Washington's birthday was combined with Lincoln's birthday and their names erased to reduce the emphasis on the real founders and builders of this nation. It is no longer politically correct to have a holiday name for a white American man, and today one race is given its own day to the exclusion of all others. Strike down the liberal racism that is eroding the foundation of our nation. Eliminate Martin Luther King Day once and for all, and call it what it is, Civil Rights Day for all. And please remove the King family from this cynical national holiday. I'm going to talk about these and other topics even if the rest of the media refuses to. With the recent ceasefire in Gaza between Israel and Hamas so close to the inauguration of the Chosen One, it leaves questions about whether or not Israel caved into political pressure, or did they get the job done just in time? You've heard our next guest, K.T. McFarland, give us reports over the recent weeks on the situation in Gaza, and she joins us today to talk about what is going on there now. K.T. McFarland, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. It's great to be back with you again.
Has Israel really succeeded in its war aims in Gaza?
You know, that's a great question. I think Israel has succeeded in its war aims in Gaza. First, it's restored its reputation as a strong and decisive military power, which was in question after its war with Hezbollah in Lebanon 2 years ago, because it yielded mixed results. Number two, Hamas has been significantly degraded, so that those rocket attacks that have been occurring for the last couple of years, and hopefully the suicide bombers, will cease. Probably not permanently, but certainly for the near term. You know, Israel hasn't completely destroyed Hamas, but it has taken out some of their senior military leaders. It's destroyed the majority of their military installations and the rocket sites and the tunnels. And the interesting thing, too, is it's done it just in time. I think that Israel's third goal was to get this all done before Obama has sworn in. I mean, you know, we've talked about it a couple of weeks ago that when Israel counterattacked in late December, it was important for them to go into Gaza now because once Obama's sworn in, you know, they might not get permission to do that kind of an attack. And it's always easier to apologize after the fact than get permission beforehand from an administration that they don't think will support them as strongly as the Bush administration has done.
Why did Israel think the Obama administration would not support them?
Well, Israel has expressed concern in the last year, both privately and publicly, about how they would be treated if in an Obama administration. They worried about his promises on the campaign trail that he would talk to Iran, talk to Hamas without preconditions. And they worried in general about his sort of anti-military approach, given the argument that he wanted to pull out of Iraq immediately. And frankly, they really worried that anybody with a middle name of Hussein would be more pro-Arab than his predecessors. I think they were also worried during the campaign that an Obama administration would tilt decisively pro-Palestinian, since some of Obama's prior associates and friends were pro-Palestinian. And so I think that was why Israel set out on this course. They clearly had planned it for months before they went in to Gaza, and I think they were worried that if their worst fears came to pass, they were unlikely to have as friendly a relationship under Obama as they did under Bush. Now, we don't know what's going to happen, but they were playing playing the odds.
What happens now?
Well, Michael, I think Israel will take a lot of heat from the world. Its actions in Gaza have been called disproportionate to the provocation of Hamas, especially because of the initial, you know, the death toll is anywhere near accurate. They projected something like over 1,000 Palestinians were killed and just a handful of Israelis. Now, that means that it was a great success from Israel's side, but what it does mean is that there was a lot of civilian casualties. Now, never mind that Hamas uses women and children as human shields in its attack, thus guaranteeing those high civilian casualties. But those casualties will always be blamed on Israel. Israel's never going to win the public relations victory, and they know it. The only public opinion that Israel needs to be concerned with right now is its own, because they have elections coming up on February 10th.
What will happen with the upcoming elections in Israel?
Well, Michael, nobody knows for sure. The three contending prime ministerial candidates are running neck and neck, and nobody knows who's going to win the February 10th elections. Before this invasion into Gaza, it was thought that the very conservative candidate, Bibi Netanyahu of the Likud party, would win. But right now, it's anybody's game. Any one of the three could win. The current foreign minister, Tzipi Livni, the current defense minister, Ehud Barak, or Netanyahu. And what happens next depends on a large part on who wins their elections. Their nearest term threat is the Palestinians in Gaza and the West Bank, Hezbollah and Hamas. Those have largely been neutralized.
But what about Iran and other long-term threats?
I think their long-term threat, Michael, is Iran and Iran's nuclear program. Throughout this whole Gaza adventure, Iran has been chugging along on its nuclear program. They now have enough enriched uranium for one nuclear weapon. Within 2 years, they're likely to go nuclear with nuclear weapons, missiles capable of delivering them to Israel. So what does Israel do in that situation? We don't know. Israel could feel so backed into a corner that it launches airstrikes against Iran's nuclear facilities, particularly if they don't think Obama is going to be able to stop Iran's nuclear program. But who knows? Maybe Obama can pull a rabbit out of a hat and get Iran to halt its nuclear program. Nobody's been able to so far, but I don't know. We'll have to see. The other thing that was of interest is the moderate Arab states. Will they find a way to reach some kind of an accommodation with Israel in what amounts to an anti-Iran coalition? These are all new and very good questions for the new Obama administration and also for a new Israeli administration that we'll see by mid-February.
We know Israel liked Bush, but he doesn't do so well here in the States.
Well, Michael, I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to see that most of the mainstream media perceives him as one of the worst presidents ever. But I think if you take a longer look, and it's going to be a very different outcome. I mean, granted, he made colossal mistakes. But if you take China, with one quarter of the world's population, China has gone from poverty to prosperity in a decade. And Bush's free trade policy has been largely responsible. Their integration into the world economy has been smooth, again, thanks largely to the U.S. And amazing as it sounds, Michael, when Bush attended the Beijing Olympics last summer, he was cheered. And then take India, which is the world's largest democracy. When Prime Minister Singh came to Washington last fall, he told Bush, quote, "The people of India deeply love you." Well, why? Because Bush's free trade policies allowed India to focus on information technology and take a quantum leap into the 21st century. And in doing that, Bush has literally flipped India from being in the anti-American camp to one of our strongest allies. Look at Indonesia, the world's, I think, fifth largest country. After September 11th, Bush enlisted them in the fight against terrorism. We had very frosty relations with Indonesia prior to that. And then when that tsunami hit Aceh in 2004, Bush didn't hesitate. He sent massive aid, and our American approval rating just skyrocketed. So by enlisting Indonesia in the fight against terrorism, Indonesia is the world's fourth largest country, and it's the largest Muslim democracy, and it is a beacon to moderate Islam. And then finally, I would say Africa. You know, for years, America's given lip service to African disease and poverty. But Bush reversed course, and today millions of Africans receive free medicine for AIDS, TB, malaria, other diseases. Half of all African food aid comes from us. And Bush founded the Millennium Challenge, which is a large-scale international program where the rich countries band together and foster economic development in the poor countries. And finally, the one thing you can never, ever, ever forget is Bush kept us safe for 8 years. And if there is a terrorist attack on the Obama watch, I think you will see the Obama honeymoon come to a rapid and screeching halt.
KT McFarland, thanks for the update on the Gaza situation.
Again, Michael, it's really great to be with you, and thank you so much for the opportunity.
This is the Savage Nation. I'll be back.
Savage.
It sounds like freedom for Ignacio Ramos and Jose Campion, those two former Border Patrol agents who were convicted of assault and discharge of their weapon. Their case has become something of a cause célèbre. Now President Bush, in one of the final acts of his administration, has commuted their sentences.
George W. Bush did the right thing today, caving into pressure from the true Americans, the conservatives. And he commuted the sentences of U.S. Border Patrol agents Ignacio Ramos and Jose Campion. In the sea of Bush's horrendous liberal legacy, this is at least one life raft we can look upon. For those of you who never saw the story reported in the midstream media, or saw it go by in an instant, or had long since given up hope that Bush would ever do the right thing, here are the basic facts. In 2005, agents Ramos and Campion, as part of their job, to defend the borders of the United States of America, shot drug smuggler Oswaldo Aldrete Davila as he was fleeing from a van load of marijuana across the Mexican border. These agents shot him in legitimate self-defense, yet they were put in jail for merely doing their job. Jail? 12, 13 years? Since then, you've heard Michael Savage and other real conservatives in talk radio insist that these brave Border Patrol agents who were doing their job be pardoned. And up until today, we didn't hold out much hope that Bush would actually do the right thing. In fact, he didn't even pardon them. He commuted their sentences rather than actually pardoning them. This means rather than recognizing their innocence, he just let them go with time served. So in the end, Bush's bleeding heart couldn't quite completely absolve them. In Bush's vast landscape of liberalism, in the midst of billions in AIDS money for Africa, in the midst of his attempt to weaken American security by turning over our port security to the folks in Dubai, in the midst of his efforts to push through an illegal alien amnesty, we find another small speck of conservatism. In this one small way, Bush tried to preserve our borders. But this commutation is too little too late. If this had come 2 years ago, it might have meant something. If it had come along with substantial effort to increase border security and an effort to ship illegals out of the country instead of giving them amnesty, it might have been meaningful. But Bush's failure on this and so many other issues have ushered in the era of Obama liberalism. Agents Ramos and Compion might be able to thank George W. Bush, but he should also thank the 100 congressmen who've been pushing for his amnesty, including liberals such as Dianne Feinstein. Okay, moving on. Human impact delaying ice age, study finds. Earth's climate may last for at least another 15,000 years. Whoo! Man, did I miss that bullet. Thank God. Yeah, I was really confused for a while. According to a new study of Antarctic ice published in the latest issue of the journal Nature, we have another 15,000 years to go before the ice melts. Gee, wow, that was close. Because I stay in a house right by the bay. I was getting my life preserver on at night, you know. I was sure I was going to wake up drowning one morning. That is good to know. It really is good. So I don't have to go to sleep with a life preserver anymore. And the greenhouse gases, apparently, is nothing but hot air. Once again, pause to consider the implication of such dramatic changes that we've wrought. Idiots. Where do you think the Ice Age came from? There were no SUVs at that time, moron. Just use common sense. You need a high school degree to understand there's no such thing as global warming, idiot. Nature has cycles. I told you that over and over again. Study the Pleistocene. You'll find out that the Earth was already warming up. And so far as I know, there was no Ford yet. He didn't invent the internal combustion engine. There were no factories. So how do you explain the Ice Age, the melting of the ice, idiots? How do you explain this, you morons, with this global warming? Get your heads together. What was that all about, the melting of the ice caps then? How did that happen if there were no SUVs? I don't understand the hysteria today. I mean, you don't even need to be a scientist to understand it. But I'm glad to finally they figured out that we have 15,000 more years that I can drive an SUV. I got to change the oil, though, if it's got to last that long. If my SUV is to last 15,000 more years, I got to really start changing the oil this time and keep it polished. Well, here's what I have up on michaelsavage.com. We have a new feature called Savage Production Notes, where I'm posting the notes I sent to my staff early in the day and then the monologues for you to enjoy. It's original to michaelsavage.com. Here are the production notes from yesterday for today's show. Guys, try to get for tomorrow Beethoven Symphony No. 9, conducted by John Elliott Gardner, especially Cut 5, O Freunde, nicht die Sitone. I want to play this all day and talk about how we've gone from Beethoven as the cultural zenith to gutter rapsters in one single degeneration. How young musical types used to try to achieve greatness by aspiring to playing Beethoven's Ninth. Today they might aspire to sing like a drug-dealing pimp. And how the same thing holds true for all other aspects of Western civilization. You see, young aspiring idealists once dreamed of being the next Louis Pasteur or Albert Einstein, but today we have thousands of mini Milkins with Madoff as the end of the line. Other stories, and they're important, are these. Bush cut sentences of Border Patrol agents Ramos and Compi, and he finally did the right thing. A new poll from CNN says that most blacks say MLK's vision has been fulfilled. Isn't that wonderful? Now, if only the white liberals would think that King's vision had been fulfilled, we'd be in good shape. So you see, it's not black folk who are pushing this country to a race war. It's CNN and the other psycho-libs from you know where. Barack Obama has only 4 years to save the world. That's the stark assessment of the madman at NASA and the leading so-called climate expert, the lunatic Jim Hansen. Yeah, 4 more years to save the earth. Sure, Jim, what have you been smoking? Rivals say that Caroline Kennedy is a certain pick for the Senate. It just shows you in America that anyone can be president and virtually no one, or at least a nobody, can be a senator. With God's will and your listenership, I shall return.
What is the Savage Nation? Borders, language, culture.
I went to Jamaica High School in New York. I didn't even know that they have a reunion. I don't know if they're allowed to have them. If they have them, I wouldn't go anyway. I never liked anyone in that school when I went there. They want to see you with the bags under your eyes down to your chin? Can you imagine? Paul, that's you? Paul, what happened to you? Paul, why haven't you used Botox?
Savage.
I say take away the vote from anyone on welfare. You get off welfare, you get your right to vote back. That's what I would do. Then we could save the nation. Then it would be one working man and one vote. Now, you notice what I just said? Not one man, one vote. One working man, one vote. One working man, one vote. Not one parasite, one vote.
This is the Savage Nation. Savage.